Welcome back to Get Up, where we are presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, and we have another terrific day of tennis for you from the Open, 11 a.m. Eastern. We got Rafa on the court today against Francis Tiafoe. Our coverage continues tonight on ESPN2, and as always, every point streams live on the ESPN app. In the meantime, hey, Sacha, how about this? App State against UNC. App State trying the onside kick, and look at Carolina take out the entire unit. Watch this.
Yeah, I saw this. Everybody was taken out, but people don't talk about the mistake that was made. If you get that return, you get down because they scored, and then App State would go and score again, two-point conversion. But anyways, it's not practice anymore, guys. This is the actual game. They will hit you.
What a crazy game that was, Heather. We got dancing with Matt Brown in the afterwards. We got overtime. We got App State again. What do we think of this action this afternoon?
This was not a good showing for the ACC all around, guys, all around.
Well, we'll see what Clemson gives us tonight. They've got to be in action as we continue live on this Labor Day from the Seaport. We are brought to you by Chase, Heather, and Fowler, and Sacha, and plenty more as we roll on. Let's roll our number two, Cindy, because we've got lots to get to. It starts off with the game of the night. Brian Kelly, his LSU debut taken on Florida State, and this one was a thriller to the final second. Third quarter, Florida State is up by 10. And Sacha, we got a touchdown and a targeting.
Yeah, great touchdown, one-handed catch, but targeting. This is the definition of targeting. Forcible contact to the head or neck area. He'd be ejected.
Florida State in front 17-3, but LSU would not go away. Fourth quarter, just over 4 minutes left. They're down two scores. But Jeray Jenkins is going to take this to the house.
The fifth-year senior, this is the first of his two touchdowns of the game. He's grown as a leader. Brian Kelly called him out. He stepped up to the challenge.
Seven-point game. They need a stop and a score. They get the stop. But then, Sacha, we can't have this.
Because someone else gets a score. That's a second muff punt of the night. Florida State scores. That two-touchdown game with 2 minutes left. You would think the game is over.
You would think, but here's the deal. Florida State, take a knee. Just kick a field goal and end the game. You can't do this.
Or just hand it off. Why toss it? Why pitch it at the goal line? You don't want any room for risk there. Hand the ball off. Lose the ball. LSU gets it.
They got a chance, and here they come. 25 seconds left. Daniels can run.
And this is why he won the starting job. Jaden Daniels transferred from Arizona State. He had over 100 rushing yards this game at quarterback. He's elusive.
10 seconds left. First and 10 from the 19. Down by 7. Daniels. Mason Taylor. He's got to get out of bounds.
Got to get out of bounds. Less than 10 seconds left. You get the first down. Try to get out of bounds. Does he?
He doesn't. Take another look. The knee is down in bounds, but there's 1 second remaining. Clock stops on a first down. Florida State takes a timeout. Here we go. Final play. Final chance. Daniels. Jenkins. Touchdown. We're tied, we think. Or maybe LSU will go for the two. Brian Kelly, what are you thinking? Now he's going to kick the extra point. And here we go. Florida State Radio. Watch this.
Snap. Spot.
Blocked.
Yeah.
It's no good.
Yeah. It's blocked. Fire up the war chant and plant the spear. Knowles win!
Oh my goodness, Shaheem Brown with the block, and just like that, LSU falls 24-23 in Brian Kelly's debut.
Look, I'm not here to, you know, say we take any solace in a loss. That's not why I'm here at LSU to learn about great lessons in losses. But the reality of it is we've got some learning to do. We've got to coach better and we've got to play better.
That's the only loss the SEC has had. They're 14-0 going into that game. That defeat makes it 14-1. LSU has now lost three straight season openers since the national championship season. And Paul Feinbaum, we'll get into the decision to go for two in a minute. But sometimes I write down the words that people use. I mean, here's his first game, and here's using words like take solace and learn lessons. Are the fans at LSU interested in those things?
No, they're not. They're interested in trying to figure out why he did all the things he did. And by the way, one more thing, Greeny. He's paid $10 million a year. Can he not afford a special teams coach? Because their special teams was a complete disaster last night. I mean, four different miscues, on two on punts, two on extra points, and a field goal. And that's why he should have gone for two. We'll talk about that in a minute. But overall, this was not why he went to LSU. He went there. He left Notre Dame as the winningest coach ever to win a national championship. With coaching like that, he better hope for a bowl game.
Well, let's do the two-point conversion here. For all the reasons you just described and more, was that, in your opinion, was that a mistake? Should he have gone for the two and the win on the final play of regulation?
I felt like he should have tried to win it right there because of all the things that had happened. I mean, why extend a game when both teams have just become inept in the final quarter, especially yours? How many more lives could LSU have in this game, Greeny? So you're sitting there with a shot. You just pulled off a miracle comeback. You got a quarterback who's on fire. You got a defense on the other side who is dead tired. End the game once and for all.
What do you think, Sacho?
I'm cool with the decision to kick the extra point, right? You have all the momentum, as we just heard. But more than that, extra point is something that's like 90, 95% of the time you make. So you get the extra point, you go to overtime, you win the game. You're not thinking it's going to get blocked, but that is the point. There was a field goal that was blocked earlier, so you have to get that short up somehow, and obviously they didn't.
So, Heather, what do we take away from Brian Kelly's going to get a lot of attention because of who he is and where he went and everything else. One game in, what do we say this morning?
We say, LSU fans, hello. Don't be surprised, because if you're paying attention to Brian Kelly, this is exactly what happened last year when he was head coach at Notre Dame. They opened against Florida State. They won in overtime. So a blocked extra point attempt from having the exact same thing happen. So, look, it's week one. Mistakes were made, but in very similar fashion, he blamed his players at halftime. They've got to fix those mistakes.
For what it's worth, I'm with Paul on this one. I think you go for the two and the win with the quarterback they have and everything else. In the meantime, two of the biggest wins from the weekend did come from the SEC, including number three Georgia beginning its title defense by just dismantling Oregon. Again, the Ducks were the number 11 team in the country, or we thought they were. Stetson Bennett threw for 368 yards, accounted for three touchdowns. It was just a blowout. Meanwhile, Florida upsetting number seven Utah when linebacker Amari Burney sealed it with that interception with just 17 seconds left in a three-point game. And I don't know how you throw that pick, but that's neither here nor there. And then in the most important game of the weekend, Heather was there to watch Ohio State in what was a battle against Notre Dame, 21-10. The Irish led at halftime. Ohio State's coach Ryan Day called it an ugly performance. And so I think the really interesting question here, Heather, because we talked so much in the build-up to this game, what would happen if this and if that and the other. Do we believe Notre Dame in the end helped or hurt their own cause to try and make it into the playoff?
They helped their cause. This isn't going to eliminate Notre Dame from the selection committee's discussions, but they have to win out. They have opportunities. They could potentially get wins against two Power Five conference champions if USC and Clemson go on to win their respective divisions. The committees wouldn't keep them out in this chance, but one of the tiebreakers is head-to-head. They lose the head-to-head to Ohio State. Ohio State is probably it. Another tiebreaker, conference championship games. They don't have one. So the pressure is on to win out. They've got to learn how to finish games.
Paul, you and I talked a lot about this game last week. In the end, did Notre Dame wind up helping or hurting their own chances?
They hurt their chances, Greeny. Listen, we can all sing Kumbaya and celebrate, and Marcus Freeman had a nice first half. But what happened in the second half, Greeny? This is Notre Dame. Let's not get carried away with moral victories and covering the spread. They're stuck. I mean, they couldn't get anything going in the second half against a really good defense in Ohio State. But they'll see defenses like that if they progress. And ultimately, Jack Swarbrick is one of the best athletic directors in the country, but by not being in a league, Greeny, they're in trouble already on Labor Day. If they were in the SEC or the Big Ten, they could make it up in a conference championship game, but they can't. They'll have to beat Clemson, pretty much of a long shot in my opinion, and maybe SC's a little bit better. They have BYU. They have a couple of opportunities, but they also have a couple of opportunities to lose again and completely eliminate themselves, which I think they will.
They have to be perfect from here on out. We get that. But they could have been eliminated by losing 36-3, and they weren't. What was your takeaway from Notre Dame's performance?
I was impressed. I was thoroughly impressed. Ohio State last year had the number one offense in all of college football. We expect them to have that again this year. And so for the game to go the way it did, I was actually very, very pleased with how Notre Dame played. Now, the other side of it is this. We talk about will they be able to make the playoff or not. Out of all the teams in college football, they have one of the best chances to go improve their resume. You have Clemson, you have BYU, another ranked team. North Carolina may be ranked when they play them. Then you end the season with USC, who could be good. And so Notre Dame has many opportunities to prove that they belong. But I think in the game that we saw over the weekend, they proved that they belong. It's one of the best teams in college football.
Quick final word, Heather, go.
One point on the conference championship game to respond to Paul is that it can help them to not play. That game can knock teams out. If Notre Dame is in the top four going into selection day and they get to sit there, they can feel pretty comfortable.
Let's see what Clemson does tonight. Let's see what that what that win would look like. We have to assume a win for Notre Dame against Clemson, because if they lose that game, then there's nothing that we're talking about here anyway. That's the college story. The NFL season is 3 days away. Rams, Bills, Thursday night. What more could you be looking for? Mike T, what's one thing you're watching for in that matchup?
Well, if there's a vulnerability for the Bills, it's going to be their secondary. They lost Tre'Davious White to injury a year ago, and whether or not Kyir Elam's ready to step up and be a frontline corner is a big question. So if Von Miller can be blocked, and that's a big if, Matt Stafford could have a big game against that Buffalo secondary.
Sacha, we got the Bucs and the Cowboys. What's one thing you're looking for in that game?
I'm excited to see Micah Parsons, what he does against this Bucs offensive line. Obviously, he plays linebacker, but they line him up all over the field. I expect him on third down to be lined up inside against some of the younger players on that Bucs O-line. I want to see him dominate.
Yeah, because what you're seeing is a lot of Tom Brady getting sacked, and that guy could be doing a lot of it on Sunday night. Watch for 11. He might be the best player in the league. Jeremy, what's the one thing you're watching for, Broncos and Seahawks?
Greeny, I'm fascinated by the marriage of new head coach Nathaniel Hackett and his quarterback Russell Wilson. How will they gel? Because the great teams have synergy between the play caller and the quarterback. And for as great as Russell Wilson is, Seattle had some issues with him not getting rid of the ball, taking too many sacks. And Hackett, his offense needs rhythm, timing. Can Wilson adapt to that?
All right, and one more game is Ravens-Jets. Greeny, what are you looking for in that game? Glad you asked. Here's what I'd say. I want Lamar Jackson to get all his money. I want Lamar Jackson, if he's going to play without a contract, to be healthy and to have a great season. But I think he needs to take week one off and just think about it. Like, I think he needs to just take, you know, listen, Lamar, don't get crazy. Like, you need to take some, you need to ponder. You need to go inside yourself. I don't think you need to be out there playing week one, okay? That would be my word of advice. My unsolicited advice for Lamar Jackson is just take week one.
Why week one, Greeny?
Think
why
it
not
through.
Week two?
Well, it might have to do with the opponent. It might not. I don't know. I'm not saying one way or the other. In the meantime, what the heck is going on with his contract at this point? We're 6 days away. Fowler.
Yes, Lamar Jackson is scheduled to practice today at 1 p.m. He will likely do so without a new contract. I continue to hear that there's skepticism around this deal getting done. They've had months to do it. Nothing has come to fruition. Guaranteed money remains a sticking point. I've talked to somebody close to the situation who said there's just not much movement right now. And so the Ravens can try to get this done in the next few days, but it would take a major upset. So we're on a standoff right now. We have this year, and then they are not afraid to use the franchise tag on him next year. He's not afraid of it either. He's embracing all this. He's made a lot of money by just sitting and waiting.
I get what we think so, but they haven't actually given it to him yet. That's we think he's made a lot of money, but they haven't actually given it to him yet. Now, Mike T, you made me think of something earlier, because I have framed the Deshaun Watson contract as it's either an outlier or it's a precedent. Make for me the argument that it isn't a precedent. Like, if you're the Ravens and Lamar comes in and says, look, I know everyone thinks that contract is crazy, but they did it. That's the new going rate for quarterbacks in the NFL. What's the argument that you make against that to him?
I use this graphic right here. If you look at some of these recent negotiations that ended in extensions, Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, they're all of the same sort of structure, which is a lot of guaranteed money, $150 million and up, but not fully guaranteed. And that distinguishment is really important right now, because Lamar is saying, I'm not taking anything less than Deshaun Watson. And the Ravens are saying, but look, these last three deals, Kyler Murray, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, they're great players. That's the market. And by the way, Greeny, let's take this a step further. Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert are extension eligible in March. They are watching this very carefully, because if Lamar Jackson gets guaranteed money like the way Deshaun Watson does, we may have a new trend. If he doesn't, the Chargers and the Bengals are going to say, hey, the Browns are crazy. They're the only team that did it. So this deal is obviously important for the Ravens and Lamar Jackson, but it's hugely consequential for the market going forward as well.
How do you feel about it, Sacho, as a player, if he's going to go out there without all that money?
I'm cool with it, because he's trying to set a precedent not just for him but for everyone else. You saw a fully guaranteed contract as a quarterback. Now the market resets every time someone gets signed. And so the market, he's saying it should reset. Deshaun Watson got a fully guaranteed contract. I'm a league MVP. He's not. And so for me, I need to get more. I need to get more than everyone else, and not because of me, because the next person behind me, Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow, they're going to get more than me as well. And so I think he should try to fight for that fully guaranteed contract.
Yeah, and talking to some people around the league, there's a feeling that the Ravens are doing enough to say they tried. but they're not doing enough to get this done. Maybe they're okay with that.
Well, I mean, they could be okay with it so long as he's okay with it. One way or another, he shouldn't play week one. That's the one week he just needs to sit. He needs to think this through and then pick it up again in week two.
Go to Ibiza for a week.
As we continue. It won't be easy without Devontae Adams in Green Bay, but can Aaron Rodgers win a third straight MVP? Our crew will give their predictions on that, plus protection problems in Big D. Is the offense good enough to make a deep playoff run? We'll answer all your questions as we get up with you on this Labor Day on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, in the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than 1 rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
We are back on Get Up, and the game is called Don't Be Surprised If. Sacho, give me one thing you wouldn't be surprised to see this season.
Don't be surprised if the Saints win the NFC South. Ooh. Jameis Winston back at quarterback. Hopefully he's healthy this year. Chris Olave, you got him. Michael Thomas, maybe he's going to be back. Alvin Kamara. And then also on the other side, there are still questions with Tampa Bay's offensive line. And oh, by the way, the Saints have beat the Bucs 6 out of the last 7 times they've played them. And so don't be surprised if the Saints win the NFC South.
I really like that one. I've heard some people say it. I think it's fascinating. Fowler, give me one thing that wouldn't surprise you.
Don't be surprised if the Detroit Lions are actually decent this year. I'm going to give the Lions some love. They got some playmakers on offense. Jared Goff is reinvigorated with new offensive coordinator Ben Johnson. He told me he's really excited about this offense. DeAndre Swift. They got some guys. Good offensive line. Defense has been the question mark, but Aiden Hutchinson is a stud. Early returns on him are really good. I think they got something going. And NFC North is wide open.
And I think every game they lost last year was by 1 point. So they're that close. Mike T, give me one thing that wouldn't surprise you.
If Jonathan Taylor of the Colts was meaningfully in the MVP conversation, and here's why, Greeny. Matt Ryan's a big upgrade, in my opinion, over Carson Wentz. This is a very underrated offensive line and offense, and Jonathan Taylor is explosive, catching, running, and I think Matt Ryan makes Jonathan Taylor better. He's going to have a big year.
Well, that actually brings us directly to DraftKings Sportsbook Predictions, which are brought to you by DraftKings. Their question for us today, and I will ask it to each of you, is who do you think wins the MVP award this year? Sacho, who you got?
I think it's going to be Justin Herbert. He's gotten better every single year. Last year, threw for 5,014 yards, 38 touchdowns, 15 interceptions. I think he's going to be even better this year than he was last year. I think he's ascending. I'm picking Justin Herbert for MVP.
Again, that is Justin Herbert hyphen Tannenbaum. Mike T, who have you got for MVP?
I'm going with my adopted son here. You know, my daughter moves out, he moves in. He has 69 touchdown passes in 2 years, which is remarkable when he wasn't even going to play his rookie year until Tyrod Taylor unfortunately got that medical situation. So I think he only gets better, as Sacho said, improved offensive line. The sky is the limit. He is a great and dominant player.
Fowler, who you got?
I'm going to go with one Patrick LeVon Mahomes. He has won 12 games every year as a starter, at least 12. We forget about this guy, right? Two, 3 years ago, like you said, we were saying he's the best ever. I still think he's got a chance at that. He's going to have a serious edge to him because everybody's thinking with Tyreek Hill gone, can he get it done? They had some struggles last year. He is going to be reinvigorated in a big way. It's going to be an equal opportunity offense, but that's going to result in a lot of passing
yards. I'm quickly trying to look up his middle name. Here we go. It's Joshua Patrick Allen, who is my pick, because you all left him off. Isn't he everybody's favorite? I couldn't believe it. I was going to try and come up with something creative and different. But Josh Allen, he's right now, I think most people think he's as good as anybody. He's got as good a team as anybody. Yeah. I'll take, what did I say it was? Joshua Patrick Allen as the MVP this
Quick
year.
Work there.
And a reminder, the DraftKings Sportsbook is an official sports betting partner of the NFL. And this week, new customers can bet $5 and win $200 in free bets instantly. Download the app when you use the code GETUP when you sign up. All right, time for Sacho.
So we got... Go ahead.
Here he is. Sorry, I thought there was an open. Here we go. We've got Sacho Man, or as we call it, Acho Man. He's got to look at some fun video that is going to be outstanding. You really didn't need me to set this up. Go.
Well, so the first one, it's just like a Houdini act. Anthony Richardson on a two-point conversion. Everyone thought he threw the ball away. I thought, you thought, we all thought. He didn't throw it away, but I love the touchdown. I'm here. I'm standing. You can't stop me. Watch it again. Anthony Richardson, pump fake, avoids it with a spin, throws it for the two-point conversion, and Florida pulls off the upset against Utah. That was part of the reason why. Anthony Richardson, outstanding. People are talking about him as a top 10 quarterback.
He's an Acho Man. Who else have we got here? We got Will Anderson.
Will Anderson Jr. and Acho. Oh. I don't even know what to say. Like, I don't have as many words as I thought I would have. Will Anderson literally said, like, I've played defensive end. I've tried to line up tight. I've tried to do the things Will Anderson does. I cannot do them. Neither can you. He's a beast, a monster. And he said, you know what? Y'all want to pass the ball. You want to do this little zone read. I'm going to change the game myself. Will Anderson Jr. knocked people's consciences just all the way off.
And then there's Mac Brown.
Mac Brown. So I don't know. I mean, like, you tell me, right? You tell me. I played for Mac Brown. He was dancing about 10 years ago. He's still dancing now. Personally, these people say this is awkward. I love it, right? Like, this is my coach, 70-something years old, dancing with me in the locker room after a win. I know we gave up 40 points in the fourth quarter, but we still won. I love it. You love it. We all love it. MBZ,
can
Mac
I ask
Brown.
An honest question?
Yes.
Is that good dancing? Because in all honesty, that's how I dance.
Oh, no.
That's how I dance. Like, if you had video, I mean, I actually think it's not bad dancing.
So the answer is no, it's not good dancing. Not good dancing, but it doesn't matter. The fact that he's even dancing with his guys, right? He's actually getting, he's not ashamed. He's like, I'm just going all the way in. Mac Brown, I love it. This is phenomenal. This
Me
is great.
Too. Call up Mac, tell him he stole my moves. I like it. I'm all in. He's an Acho Man, Mac Brown, in a celebration after a ridiculous game against App State. All right, coming up, will it be quarterback chaos in San Francisco? Have the Niners put Trey Lance in an impossible position? A Hall of Famer will weigh in on that as we continue. Plus, did you see Bryce Young Saturday night? Could the Alabama quarterback make it back-to-back Heismans? We're talking about that and much more as we roll on. We're dancing with you. Labor Day, get up on ESPN.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to Get Up. We are presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. And as we approach the bottom of the hour, again, this is how LSU lost last night. With no time remaining, attempting an extra point instead of going for the two when it was blocked. I want you to enjoy slash agonize with our friend Marcus Spears as he watched it real time.
Come on, y'all. This is a young kicker, and they already blocked one. Come on, let's just get the overtime, 34. Just a regular kick, routine. They blocked them! That's the second block kick of the game. Special teams killed LSU tonight.
Fans, right? I mean, it's as good. He's just a fan like all of us. And speaking of that, I spent a lot of this weekend, candidly all of this weekend, watching college football, and I came away with some impressions. And I've got just the right people this morning to gauge their opinions on them. Sacho's here, Feinbaum's there, and Heather, I'll start with you. I could be wrong, but I liked Michigan's offense and what I saw from them. I know we talk about Ohio State like they have the greatest offense in a century. I could be wrong, but I think Michigan's offense could be just as good.
Stop right there. Okay, first of all, it was against Colorado State.
Yeah.
Second of all, not even Michigan's quarterbacks know who is Michigan's quarterback. Cade McNamara, after the game, talked about that they've got a competition going on with J.J. McCarthy, and he said, it's unusual. Then you look at the Ohio State side. Without Jackson Smith and Njigma through the whole game, that is a different team. They were trying to get into rhythm. He got hurt. He got his helmet knocked off, out of bounds. He was trying to get back in the game, wasn't able to do it. They were out of sync. You saw in the fourth quarter, Ohio State had to win in a way it never won before. When Jackson gets back in that lineup, and you saw what C.J. Stroud was able to do, 9 of 10 completions, a touchdown, 7 minutes off the clock. Yeah. They'll be fine.
I guess here's what I'm trying to say is that I feel like the narrative has been, it's Ohio State and Michigan is down here, like the way we thought it was for a decade or so until they finally beat them last year. And I'm saying, I think it's going to be a lot closer than that.
I don't, because Ohio State got better. Like Ohio State, offensively, we know who they are, but defensively, they got better. Defensively, they held Notre Dame to no points and 72 total yards. Like Heather said it, they did what they never done before. They said, you know what, at halftime, we're going to win this on defense. And that's what they did. Ohio State won the game on defense this weekend. And so that's why I think they're better than everyone thinks they are.
All right, so no one seems to like that one. Let's try a different one. Paul Feinbaum, this one's for you. I could be wrong, but I think Bryce Young's going to win the Heisman again. And I know we touched on this earlier, but a lot of people just joining us here. Call up Archie Griffin, tell him, he needs to slide slightly over and make room. His group of one is about to become a group of two. Bryce Young is going to have a monster year at Alabama. What do you think?
All that is correct, Greeny, but here's the problem. There are Heisman voters like me. Think about this for a second. My wife, I overheard her on the phone earlier buying burial insurance because I'm closer to burial than I am anything else. I'm a youngster compared to most of the Heisman voters. They're a crotchety old group, and they don't like repeat winners. They still regret what happened in the 70s. So I think whether Bryce deserves it or not, and I think right now he does, they'll end up voting for somebody like Stroud if he continues to have a big season, or Will Anderson, who is Bryce Young's teammate.
Heather, if you had to predict right this minute who will wind up winning the Heisman, who would you predict it will be?
Right this minute, I'm going with my guy, Will Anderson Jr. I am. And you know what? His quarterback told me, I hope he does win it. I hope it comes to fruition. But I'm going to go out on a limb.
That's what people say when they've already won it.
Well, yeah. So he doesn't need to win it
if
again.
If they don't give it to Young, will it be because he already has one?
I think it will be. I think it'll be because he already has one. I mean, we saw what he did. I get it. Colorado State. But in the first half alone, what he had, 4 or 5 touchdowns in the game, he had 100 rushing yards, 100 rushing yards. I mean, he was amazing. And I get who the opponent is, Utah State.
Yeah.
But he has an opportunity next week against Texas, has an opportunity all season. I think he's going to be great.
Let me do one more. And, Sacho, I'll start with you on this one. And I want to make it clear that those of us in the Big Ten, we already consider USC to be one of us. So I think that we saw the end of the Pac-12 this past weekend. Week one. And they might as well just forget about having a team in the playoff because the only chance they have is USC, and we'll claim that one. In the same way the SEC will claim Oklahoma or Texas if they get there, we'll claim USC. Everyone else, I think, is done.
I don't agree with that. Utah, even last year, they lost 2 games early. Then they had a huge streak. They won like 8 out of their last 9. and beat Oregon twice to make it as far as they made it. And so Utah's not out, and USC, even though they will be in the Big Ten, they're not in the Big Ten yet. And so USC could be that team that gets in the conversation.
Let's talk about Utah, Paul. I mean, everyone's telling me what a great loss this is going to be at Florida. Is Florida even one of the four best teams in the SEC? Are they one of the five best? Like, is that a great loss by Utah on Saturday night?
That is not a great loss. Ask Dan Mullen if you see him in the hallways the next time you're in Bristol if that's a great loss. He was the coach last year, and he got run, and it was not a great loss. And Greeny, I think it's absurd, and I know Heather has the stats to back it up. She's the brainiac. I'm the idiot. But the Pac-12 is not going to the playoff. Yeah, you can always make a case, but Utah was their best bet. Don't forget Southern Cal, Big Ten or not, they have to play Utah later this season. They'll likely lose. Oregon, forget them. It was a disastrous weekend for that league, which is a big enough a disaster as it is.
Quickly make the case why Utah's not done.
Because they're in the same position as Notre Dame. They got to win out. They have a conference championship that they could possibly win. They've got a huge game against USC.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to yell at you, but Notre Dame lost at Ohio State. Utah lost at Florida. Those are not the same thing.
Going on the road and trying to win in the swamp is a difficult task. I don't care how good Florida is. And Notre Dame going into 106,000, that's tough too.
Look at Paul. You may be speeding up his burial. I'm a little worried about the whole situation. All right, stay where you are. We got good college football coming. By the way, we got a great game tonight. You got to see what, let's see what they've got this year with Dabo and Clemson. They're number four in the country. They take on Georgia Tech. We'll see it 8 Eastern tonight on ESPN. Coverage starts at 7 with College Football Countdown. Meanwhile, NFL week one is here. Bears versus Niners. Trey Lance versus Justin Fields. Fascinating. We know that San Francisco has brought back Jimmy Garoppolo. Steve Young, who knows a little something about being the quarterback in San Francisco, right? He weighed in on the situation there in the Mercury News. And I want you to see what Steve said. He said, I've got my fingers crossed. This is great. This is hairy stuff. That's what I would tell Trey. It doesn't matter. The job's a job. You've got to do it. If you don't do it, you have to pay the price. So there's so many things about that I'm interested in. One of them is, what does hairy stuff mean? Like, that is that a weird way to put it? What? I'm not even sure. Mike T, I guess I'd ask you a two-part question. One, do you think it's hairy stuff right now in San Francisco? And if so, then what exactly do you mean by that?
Yeah, I believe it is hairy, if I understand Steve correctly, which is they may have solved one problem, which is giving them great depth behind Trey Lance, but they definitely created another. Trey Lance has unbelievable talent. I think that's unmistakable. But he also has incredible lack of experience. He's thrown roughly 380 passes, Greeny, since high school, which is remarkably little. And when you think about how the quarterback is a developmental position, Aaron Rodgers basically played in 7 games his first 3 years. Brett Favre failed in Atlanta. Trey Lance will hit bumps in the road. And veterans like Deebo Samuel and George Kittle and Trent Williams are going to say at some point, hey, Kyle, like, we love Trey Lance in the future, but we can win right now. So I understand what Steve is saying. This could get really interesting really soon in San Francisco.
Could get hairy. Hairy is the word that he's using. That's the adjective we're using to describe it. Is it going to be hairy for the young quarterback in San Francisco?
I don't think it's going to be that hairy because the 49ers players know that their offense can be more explosive, maybe a little less efficient, but more explosive with Trey Lance, higher ceiling. So they'll be a little more patient with him. And keep this in mind, first round picks, they play. I mean, that's an NFL truism. I had an unofficial count here. 16 first round quarterbacks drafted between 2018 and 2021. All but one, Jordan Love, started at least a few games in their first year, and almost all of them were named the starter either week one, week four, week six, somewhere in that first year. So it's time for the guy to let go. 49ers know Jimmy G's only going to take them so far.
We actually have a graphic for that, Cindy. Let's put it up, right? Because these are the quarterbacks who were taken in round one that didn't start basically most of the games as rookies. Jordan Love, well, he's playing behind. We all understand he's playing behind the MVP. Lamar Jackson didn't take over until midway through the season, but we all know that he took off like crazy. And then we'll see what winds up happening here with Trey Lance. But that, if the best argument, I guess, Sacho, that we can make is, well, young quarterbacks just get the ball, I don't know if that's a good argument. Are they doing this right in San Francisco?
Well, they are, but that's not the best argument. The best argument is we believe that Trey Lance is our future, and so we want to hamper our future, even if he has a couple bad stretches. If you have a couple bad stretches as a rookie or as a second-year player, you play through it. Don't just say, put the backup in, especially when you know this guy is the guy that's going to lead our franchise for now and for years to come. And so you should not say, well, if he has a couple bad games, we got Jimmy G back there. No. You gave Trey Lance the keys, let him drive the car.
Well, that's the complicated. I get it. But it's easier to do if Jimmy G's not there, because sometimes you avoid the temptation to yourself if he's sitting there. We'll see if that winds up going. It could be hairy one way or the other. They could have shaved this problem off by not having Jimmy Garoppolo there. So we'll see how it goes. All right, as we continue, a protection problems in Dallas. Is their offense good enough to make a deep playoff run? We're talking about that and more as we get up with you. It's Labor Day on ESPN. Welcome back to Get Up. We are presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, and we have arrived at week one of the NFL season. It's time for burning questions. Mike Tannenbaum, what's your burning question leading into week one's games?
The New England Patriots against the Miami Dolphins. Two offseason narratives. Miami's going up, New England's going down. Who's calling plays for New England? And in 3 hours on Sunday, Greedy, all those questions will be answered. And it's going to be a fascinating matchup down here in the heat in South Florida.
Yeah, it's a very big game early in the AFC West. East. Jeremy Fowler, what's your burning question heading into week one?
Baker Mayfield, can this guy revive his career? He was basically thrown in the trash in Cleveland, discarded. They didn't want him. They made him take a pay cut. They went and got Deshaun Watson instead. This is a guy who has major motivation going into this week one matchup. But he's got a good situation with a lot of weapons in Carolina with Christian McCaffrey and company. Can he get it done and become a cornerstone quarterback like he was supposed to be a few years ago?
Who has a better record this year, Panthers or Browns? Good question. Sacho, give me a burning question week one.
Is the Dallas Cowboys offense good enough to make a deep playoff run? Last year they had the number one offense, but this year no Amari Cooper. This year rookie left tackle CeeDee Lamb will be counted on to be the number one. What will their offense look like, especially early on? But even if they get it figured out, will it be able to carry them into and through the playoffs?
Well, I like that because, I mean, I've had a lot of it. We had Romo talking about how they're going to be running the ball, a run-centric offense, and is it going to be Dak, and is he going to be MVP caliber, and what are they going to do on the offensive line? Speaking of which, there is some news on that as of this morning, Fowler, and what is it?
Yeah, they've been working on a Jason Peters deal, just got it done today. They've been talking for a few days. 40-year-old offensive tackle, but started for the Bears last year, major Pro Bowl pedigree. They're going to start on the practice squad, and they're going to work him back into the lineup. This is actually strategic by Dallas. They didn't want to sign anybody until week two when they don't have the same termination pay rights, not as much guaranteed money. Helps the team save a little money while Peters gets up to speed.
Well, Mike Tannenbaum, as a rule, if you're signing 40-year-old offensive tackles the week the season starts, that is usually, right, that's the universal sign for we've got some problems here in Dallas. But I liked Sacho's question. Is their offense good enough?
Yes, it is, because they still have a lot of good players. Dalton Schultz, Tony Pollard. I think CeeDee Lamb could be a number one, and their offensive line is far from perfect, as Jason Peters illustrates, but they will get better. Jason Peters will get in shape, and Michael Gallup will come back. So it won't be perfect from day one, Greeny, but they have plenty of good enough players to win with, and they will get better as the year goes on.
Well, Sacho, I mean, you're the one who posed the question. Now I'll ask you to answer it. Do you think their offense is good enough?
Not yet. I don't. Michael Gallup's not healthy yet. We're waiting for him to be back healthy. He's not on PUP. He's on the 53-man roster, but we're not expecting him to play in week one. Hopefully, Ezekiel Elliott stays healthy. I think that's going to be a key. If he can stay healthy, you have that 1-2 combo with him and Tony Pollard. We saw what happened last year on that six-game winning streak, averaging 50-something yards on that winning streak. That's number two. And then number three, if Jalen Torbert can step up and be whether number two or number three, then we will see. But as of now, I think with a rookie left tackle, even if Jason Peters plays, a rookie left tackle, questions at receiver, and hopefully have a healthy running back room, I don't think they're going to be good enough yet, but time will tell. Maybe they can get it turned on in the season.
And I'm
going
to point this out again. Cindy, I don't know if we still have that full screen graphic of the Cowboys' first six games, but the first six games of their schedule are brutally tough and interesting. They play every team in the division, and it ends, that six-game stretch ends with the Eagles at week number six. You tell me, if we don't have it, that's fine. But we do have it. It'll be up there in a second. But we all know they open with Tampa Bay. That's an incredibly tough game. They get Cincinnati. The Bengals were in the Super Bowl last year, and we think they got better from that time forward. Look at the rest of it there. Giants, Commanders, that's one thing. Then they get the other Super Bowl team, and they finish it up with the Eagles on the road. If they come out of that stretch 2-4 with a loss in that Eagles game to cap it off, the noise around that team, and in particular Jeremy Fowler around their coach, is going to be deafening.
There's no doubt about that. Now, when I talk to the Cowboys, they say they're going to be patient with Mike McCarthy. They're sticking by him. They're expecting a full, successful season. But how much can they handle some of that outside noise? But the Cowboys have been pretty calculated and conservative in a lot of areas. I think they'll at least be patient. They'll try to weather that storm, knowing how many injuries that they've had.
Yeah, look, and Mike Tannenbaum made the point earlier this morning. For all the impulsiveness that we sometimes attach to Jerry Jones, he really hasn't behaved that way in recent years, and he hasn't behaved that way with his coaching decisions. But Mike T, I'll give you the final word. If they come at that early stretch, and the Eagles' early stretch, by the way, is stunningly easy. Now, we never know how these things will actually play out. It looks easy. If they start falling way behind in the division, could we start hearing real meaningful noise out of there early on, Mike T?
I don't think so, because, again, Jerry Jones' track record is he doesn't move on from head coaches very quickly. And as Satchel mentioned, it could be Tolbert. James Washington could get healthy. Michael Gallup could get healthy. So help is on the way at the receiver position during the course of the season. So if Jerry Jones came back with Coach McCarthy for year two, I don't see 6 or 8 weeks in changing his mind.
All right, we'll see. And hopefully everything will go well for them there in Dallas. And they've got the best quarterback in the division by a wide margin. And they bring in, you know, the offensive tackle, and we'll see where they wind up going from here. It's going to be a very interesting start for the team they call America's team. In the meantime, it's time for your wake-up call. I present Dan McLaughlin, Bally Sports Midwest, Albert Pujols, 694 and counting.
The 0-1 pitch.
Albert hits one a time. Left. It is gone! 695. They pitch to him and they get burned. His final at bat against the Cubs. A pinch hit. Two-run homer.
You've got to be kidding me.
And he's now five away from becoming the fourth member of the 700 home run club. You know Babe Ruth is there. You know Hank Aaron is there. You know Barry Bonds is there. 12 of Pujols' 16 home runs this year have come since the start of July, so he is making a late season push. Speaking of home runs, Yankees Rays yesterday. Aaron Judge leading off for New York as they look to end a three-game losing streak, and he has been their offense all by himself. That's a Sean Armstrong sinker that didn't sink 450 feet. For Judge's 53rd home run of the year, that's a career high. Yanks up 1-0. Top of two, same score. Uh-oh. Armstrong going up and in on Josh Donaldson, and Donaldson does not like it. He's got something to say. Both dugouts are going to empty. Everyone's, we got a little talking, we got a little calming down, and eventually Donaldson goes to first base. No punches thrown. Bottom of nine. Yanks up 2-0. Runner at third. One man out. Clay Holmes pitching. Francisco Mejia, base hit. Scores David Peralta. It's a 2-1 game. Could the Yankees let this one get away? Later in the inning, second and third, two out. That is strike three to end the game to Yandy Diaz. Boy, that was close on the outside corner. Diaz can't believe it. Yankees win it by a final score of 2-1. And this is just incredible to me. Aaron Judge scored all the runs for the Yankees in this series. The last Yankee to score all the team's runs in a series of at least three games was Babe Ruth in 1929. Judge is doing stuff like that. Meanwhile, First Take's getting set to do some stuff. They follow us top of the hour. What should Lamar do if he doesn't get a new contract? We got Molly, we got Stephen A., we got Michael Irvin. They are 8 minutes away here on ESPN. Get Up is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, and in part by Lexus. Real life, real luxury. The Lexus Golden Opportunity Sales Event now through September 6th. And look at the lineup we have for you coming up this weekend. We're already getting excited for it. The U.S. Open Women's Final is Saturday. Saturday night on ABC, we got USC Stanford. We got the men's final from the Open on Sunday. And then week one of Monday Night Football, Russell Wilson back in Seattle. That's on ABC and ESPN and ESPN Deportes and ESPN Plus. Peyton and Eli will be back. It should be spectacular. But before we run for today, let's get everyone's biggest weekend takeaway. Heather Dinich, starting with you.
Well, my biggest takeaway happened off the field, guys. On Friday afternoon, 11 presidents and chancellors decided to expand the college football playoff to 12 teams starting in 2026. I'm heading to Dallas this week because the commissioners are meeting. We'll see if they can do this any earlier, 2024, 2025 possibility.
Playoff is going to be 12 teams. We'll talk about that as the week goes on. Sacho, biggest takeaway.
Notre Dame was better than I think a lot of people expected. They held Ohio State to 7 points in the first half. Obviously, the score, with that last score with 4 minutes left, made it look a little bit further than it was. But Notre Dame is here to stay. They have some big games coming up. They might be back in that playoff conversation sooner than we think.
Jeremy, what was your biggest weekend takeaway?
Greeny, the Florida Gators are back, baby. They're back. I remember the days in the Swamp was rocking. It felt a little bit like that, like some 90s action. So they used to have Tim Tebow, Cam Newton, some great running dual threat quarterbacks. You see Anthony Richardson, he might be the next.
He might be a top 10 pick. Mike T, what was your biggest weekend takeaway?
Exactly that. Anthony Richardson of Florida, he is a top 10 pick if you keep playing that way. He reminds me of a young Ben Roethlisberger. He is big, he's fast, he's elusive, he can make all the throws, and boy, he looks like an improved player over last year. He could work his way into the top 10 of next year's NFL draft.
We're going to have a lot of quarterbacks picked on that night. My biggest weekend takeaway came away on Friday night. I was privileged to be there at Arthur Ashe Stadium to see the end of the greatest era in the history of American tennis. Serena Williams, the greatest American tennis player that ever lived, went down like a champion. She went out fighting 6-1 in the third, does not tell the story of how competitive that match was. And as she walked off into the sunset to do whatever it is the next chapter of her life will be, she takes with her the greatest era in the history of American tennis. It was an incredible scene. I've probably been to the U.S. Open in my lifetime 100 times. I've never seen anything like that. It sounded like a football game, the way the crowd was, the electricity in that stadium on Friday night. Congratulations to Serena Williams and what was the most impactful career in the history of the sport of tennis. And with that thought in mind, I can think of only one way that we can wrap up the show today, guys, and that is with Mack Brown. Like, I thought, you know, Heather, so you tell bad. Me, like, I don't think that's such bad dancing.
What I like that? It. I like it, man. He's doing my
so – like,
yeah, I played for Coach Brown.
He's throwing the trash away.
He did the Soldier Boy in the locker room before. Pre-game, he did the Soldier Boy. Like, I'm cool with it. If I'm North Carolina, I love it. Keep on going, Mack Brown.
Yeah, I mean, but this is this a normal locker room afterwards?
Absolutely. We have parties in the locker room after games. Dance parties, party in the club, whatever it is.
Like, after you give up 40
if you
points?
Win, yeah, oh, yeah.
A win is a win. A win is a win.
Okay.
They give up 40 points in the fourth quarter alone. But you do your dance, Mac Brown. You stole all my moves. All right, this is wonderful. Have a wonderful rest of your holiday weekend. First Take starts now.